You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. 2 hat tricks in 4 games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats?
Hodgepodge.
Yeah, there's a Modgepodge. Whole Modgepodge of rumors.
This is a transfer Modgepodge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from Washington, D.C., you are listening to Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. I am Andrew Wiebe with David Goss, hanging out at RFK Stadium, staring out on the expansive green that is this beautiful pitch. Now, the rest is not as beautiful, but that's okay. Out in the octagon, Matt Doyle hanging out, talking soccer, talking playoffs. We are very, very close to the 2017 Audi MLS Cup playoffs. Boys, welcome in. We've got a new surrounding here. Brian Strauss will join us for the mailbag of SI.com.
Yeah, we did a live show here, and you started with From Our Nation's Capital, which I thought was a better open than from Washington, D.C.
I know, you gave me kind of like
did.
A sour face.
Yeah, because it was kind of not good.
Well,
so
let me ask you, have you guys gone to Nando's?
Not yet.
No, but we heard, who was it? They said there some team from some player like snuck out 3 straight nights when he was
there
here.
There are British players.
I can't remember who
there
it
are
was.
English
I don't
players,
want to out them, but.
There are English players in Major League Soccer. There's like 3 Nando's in North America. There's like 1 in Vancouver, 1 here, and 1 somewhere else. And when their MLS team goes to those cities, they tend to leave during hours. You're not allowed to leave specifically just to get Nando's.
We are probably not going to go to Nando's. We have a lot of soccer to talk about. Of course, Decision Day presented by AT&T is coming up on Sunday. All the games at one time, 11, 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. You can watch them on MLS Live. That's $7.99 for the final weekend and $4.99 if you buy it through iOS. So if you want to watch the game, skip around. That's your way to do it. Otherwise, the Whip Around Show will be going down on ESPN. Meanwhile, Doyle's going to get on a plane and, I don't know, check my watch, probably very soon, I would guess, to come out to the East Coast because in New York, in the new MLS Digital Studio, we will be hosting pre- and post-game shows around all of this. I'm going to host them. Jeff Cassar, former RSL head coach, will be on this. Ali Curtis will be there. Red Bulls fans, get in the comments section or at me. Let's see. Jimmy Conrad. I'm just waiting to see what kind of silly stuff he pulls off. And also, look, he's a pretty good analyst of the game as well, so you want to tune in for that. And, of course, Matt Doyle hanging out with us. So watch those at 3 and 6:30 p.m. Eastern. It ought to be a lot of fun. Decision Day presented by AT&T. There's just one playoff spot up for grabs. That's out in the Western Conference. 3 teams competing for that, Dallas, San Jose, and RSL. Right now, San Jose are above the playoff line. In the East, the seeding is absolutely nutty. We'll talk about all that. We'll eulogize, celebrate, whatever you want to call it, RFK Stadium with Brian Strauss. But first, big news in MLS that we will all be following closely, no doubt about that. Boiled down, Crew SC's future in Columbus is in the balance. Anthony Precourt, the owner of Crew SC, announced on Tuesday that the club is looking at strategic options to ensure the long-term viability of the club. Translated, that includes a new stadium in Columbus or a potential move to Austin, Texas. That is big, big news, although Precourt said that this is just an announcement. They are exploring their options and that, quote, no relocation decision has been made. Before I go further here, I just want to emphasize that last part. Nothing here is a done deal. This is just the first and what I'm sure will be more twists and turns for the franchise and its fans in the coming days, months, and I'm sure years with the way these things go. I don't think I have to explain to you, our listeners, how Crew SC fans feel here. They are mad. They're frustrated. They're just sad. And they are mobilizing. We will get to their words in just a second. I think those are important. In his statement and subsequent interviews, Precourt expressed concern with ticket sales, corporate sponsorships, and the stadium itself. I don't think that's a huge surprise for folks. This has kind of been in the air since 2016, and even when he bought the club in 2013, Crew fans said, are we going to stay in Columbus? Is that what's going to happen? Here are Precourt's words on what has happened in his statement. Quote, despite our investments and efforts, the current course is not sustainable, he said. This club has ambition to be a standard bearer in MLS. Therefore, we have no choice but to expand and explore all of our options. This includes a possible move to Austin, which is the largest metropolitan area in North America without a major league sports franchise. Soccer is the world's game, and with Austin's growing presence as an international city, combined with its strong multicultural foundation, MLS in Austin could be an ideal fit. In a statement, Commissioner Don Garber had this to say. He said that, quote, Columbus's situation is particularly concerning. That's in reference to most of their business metrics, and the club's stadium not being competitive or at the bottom of the league. He says the league is, quote, very reluctant to allow teams to relocate, but based on these factors, we support Precourt Sports Ventures' efforts to explore options outside of Columbus, including Austin, provided they find a suitable stadium location. Okay, so that's a lot of words, a lot of press releases there, but you get the point. The last line of Garber's statement is particularly important, though. You got to pay attention to this side because this is what it's all about, it seems. That stadium site, either in Columbus or in Texas, in Austin, has to be sorted out. Precourt said in all his interviews, in the statements, all the press releases, his letter to fans, that private funding is going to be key on both sides, whether it's in Columbus or it's in Austin. He pointed to Franklinton, Arena District, or downtown in Columbus, and said he had voiced his concerns to local politicians and business owners since 2016. Meanwhile, Andrew Ginther, the mayor of Columbus, said he was, quote, surprised to learn of the decision in this way. In Austin, Mayor Steve Adler said that an MLS team would find support in Austin, but there would not be support for a publicly funded stadium. So back to that privately funded side. So a lot to ingest there, a lot to think about, and we've all been doing it for the last couple days. Here is what we do know. Crew SC will play in Mapfre Stadium next year, and Columbus fans are definitely rallying around each other, as are other fans in MLS, to try to keep the club in Ohio. Maybe you've seen, you know, other club crests in yellow and black on Twitter. Maybe you've seen the Save the Crew hashtag. Go check those out. Here's a couple voices to put their sadness, frustration, and anger in perspective. Dave, take it away.
Yeah, Nicole from Columbus here, and of course the Hot Take Hotline's there for you anytime. The news this morning of Crew's almost certain move to Austin has knocked me off my feet. My 5-year-old daughter has pictures of Justin Meerum hanging on her bedroom wall. My season ticket holder mom bought my 3-year-old son a jersey to grow into. My kids think Glory to Columbus is a bedtime lullaby, one I'm happy to sing over and over and over. I've been here since the very beginning. I've experienced so much joy from this club, and now my heart is broken. I thought my passion for the sport could never be tested, but between no World Cup and my club bailing on my city, my spirit has been broken. Matt Lamson, goalkeeper for Chicago Fire, at Lam Strong. Columbus was my home. The Crew gave me my first opportunity to play the game that I love for a living. They are a pillar of MLS. Hashtag Save the Crew.
Yeah, that's heartbreaking. I think anybody listening to that can feel that emotion from those folks. But again, nothing is done here. So it's not a done deal. There's a lot to play out. We're going to have to pay attention. My perspective quickly before we get to soccer and decision day, it's never happened to me, but you never want to see anybody lose their team. Ever. Not ever. I cannot imagine or identify personally. I won't pretend to know how it feels, Crew SC fans. I can only imagine what you're going through right now, and I'm thinking of...
I can. I grew up a Whalers fan. I probably went to 100 Whalers games over my life, and I'll be a Whalers fan forever. I remember pretty vividly the pain of losing that team. There's nothing quite like it, I don't think I'll ever really get over it. So which is to say that if this does happen, I feel for Columbus fans, and I hope that a solution is found.
As always, Hot Take Hotline is open, 401-206-0-MLS. Let's talk about soccer, a welcome respite from some of the things we've been talking about for the last week and a half or so with the U.S. national team and now Crew SC. Look, the Eastern Conference, I'll start with Crew SC because part of the shame here is that they're playing so well right now, and this is an inevitable distraction. There's no way that this is not a distraction for Greg Berhalter and his players. You know, they can go inside a bubble, but on the outside of it and within their own fan base, there's this uncertainty that has been introduced. They go to Queens, which for the first time, New York City FC will host a game at Citi Field. The Yankees, of course, in the
Doyle's
playoffs.
Doyle's team. Because they're the Hartford NYCFCs, right, Tom?
Now you're cheering for Connecticut.
That's something we said we would never do. But Crew SC in fifth, New York City FC in second, just 3 points separate them. If Crew SC win this game, they will have the edge on wins. So conceivably, they could jump to second because wins are the first tiebreaker. Goal differential comes after that. In the Eastern Conference, it's New York City, 56, Chicago Fire, 55. Atlanta United, 54. Columbus Chrissy, 53. Red Bulls are stuck in sixth. Toronto FC, of course, are Supporters Shield winners. They are 12 points ahead of everybody else. This could be a shuffle here, Doyle, and this could determine playoff fates because, A, you're playing for a bye. There's a bye at stake, and technically any of these teams could go grab it. And, you know, you also need home field advantage in the knockout round. Just ask Sporting Kansas City. Who has the most riding on this? New York City FC hosting Crew SC, Chicago Fire playing Houston Dynamo, and then Atlanta United taking on Toronto. Who will they, won't they go for 71?
Yeah, I think it's probably a coin flip between Atlanta and Chicago having the most riding on it, with maybe edging towards Chicago because they need – I mean, Bastian Schweinsteiger's hurt. They need the extra week to get him back and on the field because they are a different and obviously much better team when he's available. Now, the same can be said for a few guys for Atlanta United, but the home road differential, the home road split for Atlanta isn't quite as steep as it is for Chicago. But don't write off NYCFC. They need a little something, and they haven't had much over the last month and a half. And they have gone 8 or 9 games without scoring more than a single goal, which is kind of shocking for a team that was, I thought, one of the best attacking teams in the league to start the season. As you said, it's a mess. You know, there's a lot of permutations here. I can't look at this group and say that there is one team, obviously, head and shoulders above the rest. I think everybody needs to come out this weekend sort of hell-bent for leather.
And to Doyle's point, it's for different reasons, right? For Chicago, it's health. For Atlanta, although it's Almiron, it's how much better they are at home than they are on the road in the way they play. And that whole reason, and then like you said, for NYCFC, they need something to go right currently. They've got Jack Harrison back. That's
yeah,
a piece.
By the way, that red card rescinded, yeah. Pulled that one back.
But the way they're playing right now, they've had excuses. That guys have been hurt. That guys have been out. But right now, you're all back together, and you need something going into the playoffs to say, yes, we are the team that was second in the league for almost the entire season.
And the flip side, you got worked over last year. And I know Toronto FC got the MLS Cup, great team, incredible players, but they got kind of embarrassed in the playoffs. Mm. And if you go and you know, okay, fine, you had a good regular season, but now you're in the knockout round and you kind of fade out. We're not just talking about the project. We're not just talking about David V, even though he'll be back, and Jack Harrison, who knows? I mean, inevitably turnover happens. You're also looking at Patrick Vieira, the head coach. He's done incredible things, but he needs a chance to win something. I mean, ultimately, that's what coaching careers are built on. You don't remember the guys that did pretty well. You remember the guys that won things, and I think he has the talent as a coach, and I think the team has the talent to go do it. By the way, Miguel Almiron, throwing out Instagram posts of himself in training. Do we think that's an actual thing where he's close to being back, or is that a, hey, let's introduce the possibility into our fans' and opponents' minds?
They're crazy if they play him more than 30 minutes. I'm going to assume it's not a complete lie. I assume that he'll play this weekend, but I don't care what they're – you know, what their physician says or you know, what they think of his injury. If they play him more than 30 minutes, they are crazy. You cannot just immediately start overworking a guy. It's exactly what they did with Garza a couple of weeks back, and now he's gone until probably, I mean, unless they make MLS Cup, we're not going to see him again until 2018. So, look, I'm going to take them at their word that he's available. But again, they are crazy if they play him for more than 30 minutes.
401-206-0MLS. If you're Matt Doyle and you need some place to let off some steam or hot takes right now, that's the hot take hotline. You could feel that angst on the Greg Garza move.
Well, it's because
sure.
People really came, they came hard, and especially Atlanta fans, like, no, Tata does no wrong. This, like, whatever, that's, you know, he can make a mistake. There can be repercussions to the decision he makes, and that's going to affect your season. They host Toronto FC.
I'll be there.
You will be there. You will. What does Toronto FC do?
Because
they have 16 points. They're tied.
Yes.
For the record all time. So they're
explain it
know,
to the people.
They're there. The regular season best ever.
No. They are not there. They are 1 point away from being there. They put together a season like this. You don't have to bring your best team across the board to get a point. Now, Atlanta at home, They go up 5-0. Okay, that is what it is. That's what they do, maybe. But I just think, first of all, you're going to have a break coming off this. Second of all, we've seen that teams that are in that 3-4 spot be almost better in that first playoff round because they're coming in with flow and momentum and confidence. And I don't think you completely want to lose that for Toronto. They had something to play for last week in that they wanted to tie the record. They wanted to do it at home. They were playing their rival. They had something to play for 3 weeks ago when they got Supporter Shield. So they've had things to push for. And I'm not saying to throw your dice out there and say this is everything that matters, but I think having a team that can focus on these goals and continue to push themselves and continue to work hard and not fall asleep before they go into playoffs is worthwhile and get the point record.
Yeah, you're setting a tone in a way, which is what they've talked about all year. The flip side, Doyle, is that Atlanta United can beat you 5-0.
Mm-hmm. They do that, then you sub three guys out in the 30th minute and you move on.
Okay, do you just move on from that? I know that Toronto FC could. I'm just not sure that then by giving Atlanta those 3 points as well, plus some goal differential, which they don't really need because they are head and shoulders above everybody but Toronto FC, maybe you've opened up a bye for Atlanta. Maybe you've opened up your worst nightmare to be in the best possible shape to come at you.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't think anybody wants to play Atlanta, especially if it's an Atlanta team that's cooking. And they've been a little bit off the pace the last 3 weeks. And I'm sure Toronto would love to continue that. And if they can, at the same time, maybe knock them down to fifth place, it's something that they have to weigh. But they also have to weigh the fact that Jozy Altidore was carrying around a kind of a gimpy hamstring for most of last month. And this is a game on turf. And obviously, Sebastian Giovinco has had a ton of injuries this year. And this is a game on turf. I think Greg Vanney's pushed most of the right buttons this year. If I were him, I would play it a little bit conservative, a little bit like, okay, we're going to come out with a B-plus team and we're going to sit back and see what Atlanta want to throw at us, and maybe we'll get him on the counter. You know, maybe we could open up to Tyson Ricketts and let him run and get behind that defense, because that defense, by the way, is going to be playing without Leandro Gonzalez-Perez. And the only time we've seen Atlanta without him, they were a tire fire at the back. So there's a lot of stuff to balance here. I really don't know what we're going to see.
It's going to be an interesting one. The Eastern Conference completely up for grabs. 2-5, seeding, buys, knockout round. It's all to play for. Meanwhile, Toronto FC and the New York Red Bulls are just kind of stuck, bookended in this thing. That's okay, though. The Red Bulls will be here in D.C. on Sunday for a rivalry match, maybe get things going, and then figure out where they're headed for the knockout round. All the information, MLSsoccer.com. What if the playoffs started today? You can get that standings, live standings as well during those matches. And then on Sunday, on Decision Day at 3 p.m., your pregame show, and at 4, all the games. We're going to go to break. When we come back, right into the Western Conference.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
I was gonna die young. Now I gotta wait for you. Now I gotta wait for you.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental, onto the Western Conference. A lot to play for here, of course. One spot left. FC Dallas, San Jose, and RSL are fighting for it. If San Jose win and they are hosting Minnesota United, they are in. They got their business handled in Vancouver. Who would have thought that draw would have been so, so important? The other team stumbling on the second to last day of the season. FC Dallas, meanwhile, they've got a win. They need San Jose to tie or lose. And then RSL, they've got a win, and then they need a lot.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but right now they're pulling the dugout booths out at RFK Stadium, and their process is that they have a gator, and someone's sitting on the back of the gator using their feet as the toe rather than having an actual toe, and the dugouts are on wheels.
Oh, my.
What a place.
Brian Strauss, by the way, coming up to tell us all about this incredible, incredible stadium, which if you haven't been here, I'm sorry you won't get to make it, because it is truly special. There's something about it. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Doyle, what's your bear and tea here? We don't have a Ben the Research Bear to make one. Who's getting through?
Actually, Ben made one. He made one in the East. He said that Chicago would get jumped or something like that. I don't even
remember. But we're talking about the West, and I asked Doyle, San Jose, Dallas, or RSL. Who you got?
I don't know.
RSL hosting SKC and Dallas hosting LA.
Right. I don't know. I mean, obviously, San Jose are in the best position because they're playing an expansion team at home with complete control. Like, if they get the job done, and they've been pretty good at home under Chris Leach, they're through. So they're like, that's where the smart money is. But like, I don't trust any of these teams. Do you?
No. How could you?
Here's my bearing team. FC Dallas is not going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty straightforward guarantee.
Although they're playing LA, who's the worst team in the
league. Sure, but LA just smoked Minnesota at home, and LA is actually better on the road than they are at home. And LA has some talent. It just hasn't all come together, and they're playing for pride. And Dallas, I don't know what they're playing for at this point. It's
not pride.
It's not for points. It's definitely not for points. Okay, let's take Dallas out. So now it's RSL who need help. They need a tie or a loss from both Dallas and San Jose in home games. I'm gonna go ahead and say they're probably done. I'm gonna go ahead and say it's San Jose with the old negative 22 goal differential albatross hanging on their necks.
Then just stand up on your feet. What if that just happened right now?
What are you gonna shout out though?
I don't know.
That was part of the song.
I know it really hurts. I mean, them, the whole scenario that they didn't get that draw in Colorado and at least put themselves firmly in this conversation. Because when you just said that, it's just a lot to have to rely on four other teams
to
do business.
It's also
for
Sporting
you.
Kansas City, the only opponent among these three that has something to play for, truly. And Sporting KC have a lot to play for. They need to avoid the knockout round on the road. They got to do it. And just like the Eastern Conference, the standings in the West – except for 2-5, it's 1-5 basically because it's 52-47. But it's 50-47 from 2-5. Anything could happen. If they win, maybe they get a bye. If they lose, maybe they're going to Portland or Seattle or perhaps even Houston. Who knows? And none of those are recipes for success. Not when you're limping around here with a 2-7-7 mark on the road.
Yeah.
So. I think San Jose's probably got it. Sporting Kansas City, there's a lot to play for. I mean, you love the Sounders and hate the Timbers, Dave, so yeah. I've got to imagine that you figure.
I don't even want to talk about how much I hate the Timbers because I don't want to give them the time on the show right now.
One dude came at you on Twitter. What? You are so
sensitive.
Doyle,
I would never want to live your life. I would never want to live your life. Yeah, I mean, I picked Portland to win MLS Cup in preseason.
Can we just set the stage so our listeners know that you don't actually hate the Timbers? You're just very, very sensitive young man.
Yes. People came after me on Twitter and said, on Monday.
People or one person?
No, multiple. Two people.
I think that was the same person replying to the same tweet. Anyway, they came after
don't
Dave
because
he
me.
Said they
don't.
Thought
that. I don't want it.
Okay, we'll just let it die in the dust. But the biggest game out west this weekend is Portland-Vancouver because that one's going to decide who finishes atop the conference. Who finishes atop the conference? I mean, it's in Portland. Vancouver, decent on the road. They can hit on the break. They got the set pieces. Portland's got Diego Valeri, who I think we've all decided to agree is the MVP. Congratulations to him, unless something crazy happens. And I don't know, like Nicholas scores 5 goals or David Villa scores 3 from midfield and all the voters are swayed. This is a huge game, and it's the same game that the last regular season ended with, the game in which, as we mentioned on the last show or 2 shows ago or something like that, the Caleb Porter phase was in full effect. That one was in Vancouver. This one is in Portland.
Yeah.
Fernando Adi, I would hazard a guess, given that he hasn't been around for, it's months at this point? And
Doyle, you can go first.
Yeah, I think Portland win. I understand that Vancouver have had a nice year and they've overperformed some expectations, but that run that they had from mid-August to mid-late September, that was 6-7 at home. Obviously, they got a result in KC a couple weeks back through the grace of Eric Hurtado, but they're not the same team that they were a month and a half ago. And I just I don't think Portland's a thundering juggernaut or anything like that, but I do think that with Valeri playing the way they are and with Maddox opening up space and back lines, They're finding a way to get wins, and I don't think they're going to give this up at home. So I think Portland get the win and end up taking that top spot in the West.
I mean, it continues to be in the West. Like, we can't have the same conversation every week, but it feels like
we
should.
We don't have to anymore. Because it'll be the playoffs. So
no,
we'll
right.
actually physically
I guess,
decide
yeah,
it.
Somebody's got to go prove who the best yeah. team is at this point. Because I can find significant holes without really looking that hard in all of these teams.
Here's my promise. Vancouver draws Portland at home. Portland looks the better team and deserves to win. And you come out of the weekend still unsure of every team in the Western Conference.
In that scenario, do you have Seattle topping the conference because you're a Seattle homer?
Can't. Even Dave Goss.
Seattle getting 5
Even Dave
points.
Goss can't give them 2 wins from 1 game.
I think Ozzie Alonso scores 3 and they win the game.
Oh, now you're on the Ozzie Alonso one too. All these Twitter trolls are just really getting under his skin. Remember, wins are the first tiebreaker. So
right,
Seattle
right.
Sounders cannot get up into first. They can tie the Vancouver Whitecaps should the Whitecaps draw. Or the Portland Timbers will win the conference if they win because of wins
being
that first.
You have
to have
a team play another team. The logic of that.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying? They could pass
yes.
Vancouver.
Both teams can't get 0
yes,
points.
They could pass Vancouver.
Correct.
They'd still be behind
Correct.
Portland.
Correct. I wasn't following that. I was like, yes, another team will play another team, Dave. Thank you.
I will just say that I've seen some Western Conference games this year where I'm pretty sure both teams got 0 points.
Oh,
we're
man.
Getting a little bit punchy out here at RFK Stadium. We're hungry. It's time to go get some food. But first, Brian Strauss is going to join us. He has so many memories from this wonderful, wonderful venue that is also quite dilapidated. And, you know, it's time. Audi Field, 30, it's time.
30,000, though, on Sunday.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah.
For RFK.
Saying goodbye. Of course they are. And it's the Atlantic Cup as well. We're looking forward to that one. Remember, 4 p.m. Eastern, ESPN has the Whip Around show. 3 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. That's your pre- and post-game shows. Tune in, hang out with us, hit us up on Twitter. We're going to go to break. We'll be right back.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. Hanging out at RFK Stadium. We're rolling on here, and we have a very special guest to talk about the historic venue that this is. It's historic, Brian Strauss. It's also a little dilapidated. That's okay, though. That's the charm of this place. Every time I came here, the bouncing stands, some of the missing paint, the beautiful sight lines that I don't care if there's some busted up chairs on the top level. Those can't obscure that this is a place built for many, many things, but ended up just right for soccer.
Well, we're in the press box now, too, so please don't ignore the Wasps for a variety
yeah.
of reasons.
I forgot about that.
Both for disrespect and for your personal safety.
It was these are perfect spots here in the lights, I feel like. Cozy, a little bit warm, you know, don't get much moisture up there, but a nice little hidey hole. Look, this place is imperfect.
A lot of secrets in this place.
Everybody knows that, and there's jokes about the raccoons and the animals, and over the last couple of years, it's become one of those. This is not the right phrase. It's not the butt of jokes, but it is a place where you are confronted by, you know, it's age. It's an old girl. It's seen some things, many things, more things than just about any soccer stadium in the U.S. ever
well,
has.
One of the neat things about it is sort of the way the home field advantage has evolved for D.C. Obviously, at the very beginning, you know, United was a great team. And when you compared this venue to the other venues early in MLS, I mean, other teams were coming in playing in, you know, cavernous old NFL stadiums that were, you know, three quarters empty, where there was literally no atmosphere to speak of. And they come here and there's 20,000 people and the stands are bouncing and the team is really good. That was a tough place to play. Now you fast forward 20 years and, you know, teams are trying to adjust to the fact that there are leaks and you know, you know,
David, this is not one of the visiting locker rooms.
Right.
Say that
David Villa doesn't want to touch that, you know, and so the, you know, it's become uncomfortable for visiting teams in a different sort of way. And I like the way DC has embraced it. They've, you know, they, you can buy a stuffed raccoon at the gift shop. I mean, that's
cool. I know.
That's
we're trying to get our hands on one of those.
Yeah. It's, you know, they know that, you know, every time they see an opposing team, you know, tweet out, you know, where the flooding is, you know, they know they've got one up on them. So I like the way they've sort of continued to try to evolve and use this place to their advantage while they've been stuck here, because they have been. They've wanted to leave for a long time, so they've made the best of it while they've been here.
401-260-MLS. It's a hot take hotline. You can call or text. We'll get to your calls, your texts, your complaints in just 1 second. Your history with this place, you said the Redskins, but it goes back to 96, and a young soccer player, a late teenager, I think he's, you wanted.
Oh, for me, yeah.
Yeah, you wanted to be a part of this team. Tell me about 96. Tell me about the team coming here, how you experienced it, what your part was.
This place, I mean, this place was already iconic in D.C. Obviously, the original, well, not the original, I don't know my baseball history. I think the second Senators played here. But then, of course, this place was the epicenter of sort of the Redskins mania that took over this city in the 70s and the 80s. With George Allen and then obviously Joe Gibbs and winning the 3 Super Bowls. And it was impossible to get in. You could not get into this
even
stadium
with 56,000 seats
for a Redskins game. And so DC United walked into a stadium that already had some cachet and some magnetism to it. And, of course, they walked in with a team that, in hindsight, I still would stand. I mean, maybe I'm a bit of a fanboy here because I was a fan at that time, but – you know, you put up a team with Echeverry and Moreno and Harks and Pope and Agus. You put that up against any team that's ever played in MLS, and you're going to do okay. And so they immediately just a brand of soccer, an atmosphere, an aura, a look. You know, think about those old black uniforms compared to the silliness, you know, the celery green and the rainbows and the fire-breathing horses and all the other nonsense. And so
there's also a difference in Marco Echeverry wearing that jersey and anybody else wearing that jersey. It just kind of –
El Diablo just kind of took on this
like, ooh, I don't want to mess with that guy.
When I started at the Washington Post, you know, working and learning under Stephen Goff, you know, and when he would send me to do a United game or a practice now and then, every time Marco got upset over something, I got really nervous. You know, like Marco would come into the locker room after a game where he felt like he'd been kicked a bit too much, and I'm quitting. I can't do this anymore. I can't play with these referees. I can't play in this league. I'm done. And I'd panic, right? Because, like, oh, my God.
He's serious.
Like, I'd call the desk. Hey, Marco's quitting. He's leaving D.C. What do I do? And, it's that's just him post-game. That's cool. Chill out. You know, and so you were around guys who – you know, not only guys of that stature, but when you're growing up as a soccer fan in this country and there was no MLS. And so you look up to guys like John Harks, the national team guys. I mean, there was personality and gravitas in that room. And they looked good. They played good. You know, the stands, this was the epicenter of American soccer. I think for the first decade of MLS. And I think most people realize that. I think most people know that. And then in addition, you have the fan culture, you know, that guys like Matt Mathai created with the Screaming Eagles and the Barra Brava. And that was the first of that we saw in this league as well. So it was just the whole combination of things.
What I love about this press box and our view in particular is, like, I just can't keep my eyes off the pitch. It forces, it's this big green luminescent thing that you just – I want to see soccer played there. I just feel – you feel like something's happening that's not the guy mowing stripes in a lawnmower. I don't know. It's just every time I've watched a game here too, this feel.
So what is the bittersweet feel for fans, for people in this area who have been talked about getting a stadium for a really long time? Now it finally happens, but you got to say goodbye.
Yeah, it's not bittersweet. There's a lot of great memories here, but, you know – speaking as a Washingtonian, speaking as someone not as a fan of any particular team, and now I don't cover DC United that much. You know, I mean, they're one of, you know, 22 teams in the league, and you know they're not very good this year, and so I mean I'm not writing on them. So I'm a Washingtonian who wants to see the sport do well in my city, and you got to have it. You got to have the stadium. You got to have the nexus. You got to have the place that people come, that people gather, that makes the team healthy. That you know, Bill Hamid has told stories about running up and down the ramps of the stadium when he was a kid and then coming to play here. You need that for the next generation too. And it's been tough, obviously, it's been good. It's good for American soccer, but it's also tough to watch it happen elsewhere and sort of wonder when it's going to be your turn. You know, and I credit the owners, variety of owners of this club, those who tried and failed stepped aside and made way for others to come in and try. And credit to Eric Tohir and Jason Levien for getting it done.
Buzzard Point, I mean, what's that mean? What is it? I'm not from this city. Most people aren't. Most of the people listening to this show have no idea.
It sounds freaking awesome.
Yeah, it does. But that was the first thing I thought.
You're coming to Buzzard Point.
Like,
good luck.
I mean, it sounds awesome, but it also sounds like your bones might get picked dry out
there.
They
might.
I mean, like an elephant graveyard of sorts. Tell us about the area, what you've seen of the stadium, the designs, what it's going to mean for
the
soccer.
The designs keep changing.
They always do, right? First design.
You can make like one of those animated flip books of the designs of the stadium. Buzzard Point is in the southern part of the city, along the river, and it's a part of the city that's growing. We have experienced. I'm not going to get into the economics of the deals and whether it's good or bad or whatever, but we certainly have experienced in this city a positive effect from stadiums being built. I forget what Verizon Center is called now, Capital One something or other. But the arena where the Capitals and the Wizards play, which was late 90s, I think, absolutely transformed that part of the city. And it's now one of the nicest, most popular parts of the city. You know, the Chinatown and Convention Center area, and it really made a difference. And the same is true with Nationals Park, and it was cost a fortune and may not have been the best deal, but what has happened around that, it really has spurred development. Restaurants, bars, office buildings, condos leading down toward the river. There's a beautiful river park there now, and that is going to be extended now toward the southwest by Audi Field. It's a location. It's crappy, sort of gravelly industrial land now, but in 10 years it won't be, and the stadium's going to have something to do with that. So it's a bit of a hike from the metro. You know, the people who love its tailgating in Lot 8, that's a big part of RFK culture. They're gonna miss that, and that sucks. But you got to give up something to get something, and it was very important to the club to remain in the district, to remain part of the city. It's part of the fabric of the culture of this thing, and again, it took them 20 years, but it's happening. It's kind of hard to believe. We're still waiting for something to go wrong, I think, some of us.
On the field, I mean, that's the next big question. You move into a new stadium. You got a big, just a huge road trip. I mean, I should have joked to Paul Areola and Ian Harkes earlier about packing their bags and making sure they've got that figured out, because they're going to be gone for a while before this thing opens.
Yep.
They invested a lot this summer, and they went out and got Paul Areola, who's on the beginnings of his U.S. national team career. Zoltán Stieber looks like a good signing, a solid MLS player who can produce. And you have a lot of guys up and down the roster who they need to step up coming into the coming years, but it doesn't quite feel like it's not a playoff team yet.
No, but you're going to have some salary coming off the books as well next year. So they're going to have some leeway to spend a little bit more. And it'll be up to Levien and Tohir and Dave Casper and Ben Olsen to sort of gauge the you want to win. I think Ben, you know, Ben's been the coach of this team for a long time, and I think there is going to start to be a little bit of pressure on him to. They've made the playoffs the last few years, but this season is a last place finish, and it needs to be better. So I think there'll be some more pressure on him than there has been in the past, and they're going to have to gauge the market to get a sense of how long the novelty of the stadium is going to last and at what point you really start to have to deliver. And maybe they're sort of wondering what the financial position of the club is going to be after they've been in the stadium for a year or 2 years. What level of DP can you go out and get? Can you go out and get the Villa, the Schweinsteiger, the Giovinco? I don't know. In a sense, we had that here. I mean, Echeverry and Moreno were that.
Yeah, no doubt.
For that time. And so
almost like a Miguel Amirón in Jaime Moreno.
Yeah, yeah. Someone who came from nowhere. You know, a guy who got at 19 or 20 showed well against the U.S. at a friendly here. And you know, we were joking before. If that friendly is in Dallas, or if that friendly is in New Jersey, or if that friendly is in L.A., maybe Jaime Moreno never comes to MLS. Maybe he plays for the Dallas Burn. But he played well here, and Kevin Payne and Bruce Arena were watching, and the rest is history. And in my opinion, You know, he's the best player of MLS's first decade.
I think you're right about that. I think some of those guys need a little bit more credit, and I hope everybody out there listened to our Carlos Ruiz interview. I mean, the man is
the most infuriating player of MLS.
He is. But then when you're in a room with him, he's the most lovable. Yeah, you know what I mean? You're like, of course you flopped. Of course you threw that elbow. How could anybody blame
you, Pescadito?
I can't hate you.
Yeah.
It's hard, man. 401-206-0MLS. Dave, let's roll into the mailbag. What do we got?
Well, on that point, we already asked this question, but now Brian Strauss is here. Someone sent in on our last show, who is the modern version of Carlos Ruiz in Major League Soccer? Now, you can judge that however you want. That's the debate we kind of got into of, is it goal scoring? Is it the gamesmanship? But who is your...
I don't want to taint your take here. It's hard. It's not easy because he's such a unique beast. But
yeah. There's a little bit of Jermaine.
Yeah. No, I could see that.
Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Kind of... He's going to do something, and it may be brilliant, it may be insane, it may win you or lose you the game.
I was just going to say.
I don't know.
We didn't come up with that one, did we?
No.
What did you come up with?
We were more on the striker front, I think. We were saying maybe a Dom Dwyer and his like willingness to sometimes do something that, let's say, an opposing fan base would consider.
I said Bradley Wright Phillips. Just it doesn't matter how, but scores goals.
Nikolic was in that conversation in the same way.
Mainly because Carlos Ruiz, it seems like, is in love with Nikolic because I think he sees a little of himself in him right now.
But nobody has what Carlos had across the board, from a playing style to a productivity to a personality to being just kind of front and center of so many big storylines, whether it be the Landon Donovan trade or otherwise.
How about this one? Who's the one player from MLS history you'd love to see playing nowadays in this league the way it is?
Clint Mathis came to mind for some reason.
That's a great one.
When you asked that question, I was going to do word associate, like who popped into my head.
Cletus would be perfect. I mean, in the social media age too.
Yeah, and just his range and his creativity and his goofiness. I was in an event. It was MLS Cup 2000, I think, and I was able to score a ticket to the like the commissioner's party. And I was a nobody at the post at the time, and so to have this was amazing to get to go to this thing. And it was at a restaurant on the Georgetown waterfront called Sequoia, which is really nice and not a place I ever would have gone otherwise. And Clint was there, and I don't know why he recognized me or from where he shouldn't have recognized me, but he did. And he kept trying to get me stuff. He kept offering to get me, like, can I get you a drink? Like, can I get you a brownie?
A brownie?
Like, no, you're Clint Mathis. No. Like, what are you? He was just, like, the nicest, most unassuming, like, weirdest, most awesome guy. And I've always been a fan and still see the goal against South Korea in my dreams.
I think that's a great question, though, to put to the fans.
So, I don't know.
401-206-0MLS, which player
he popped in my head
that you watched back in the day would you like to see in this iteration?
And here's one from Dustin Broster on Twitter, and he said
– Already predicting him, huh?
No, but he said the Carlos Ruiz interview was amazing. What are the other long-form or story-time interviews we could look forward to? So who would you want to hear?
Best interviews you've ever done for you, Brian. What are the – when you're thinking about U.S. soccer, MLS, who are the guys that just –
I can't believe you guys didn't give me like 5 minutes.
I know. We're bad about this stuff.
We think off the cuff is better.
Again, who comes to mind? Thomas Rongen is amazing to talk to.
Thomas Rongen.
Story time with Thomas should be
censored.
A thing. Yes.
Should definitely be
censored.
That
is not a family show.
Thomas Rongen, my favorite Thomas Rongen story from just working with him. He did some MLS streams with us a couple years ago. And we'd be like, all right, Thomas, 2 minute break. We're on, you know, sixth floor, and he's like, okay, smoke break? We're like, Thomas, no way, man. What are you doing?
Bring it back to RFK. I will say that there was a period in DC United's history where the characters in that locker room were you know, beyond a young reporter's dream come true. You had Benny Olsen, Bobby Boswell, Aleko Eskandarian, Santino Quaranta, Troy Perkins was a great interview. I'm sure there are others. There were a lot of awesome personalities here too. And so even after once that great team from the '90s sort of moved on, when you move into the 2000s and that Freddie, of course.
You
know,
it's easy to be, it's somehow that
we
story.
We totally didn't talk about that this entire time we've been here. Was Freddie a dude?
How
so
did
Freddie,
we miss that?
There was a columnist. There was a columnist for a long time at the Washington Post called Bob Levy. Bob Levy was a really, really, really nice guy. And Bob wrote a column called, like, I just think it was like Bob Levy's Washington. And it was just like the man about town, what's going on in the city kind of column. And Bob loves soccer. And so Bob would pop into the sports section sometimes. And I was, again, a young nobody getting Mike Wilbon's mail. And we would chat about soccer. And he's like, you got to – my son plays at Potomac for this club team. You got to come see this kid he plays with. This kid's crazy. And it turns out Bob Levy's son, Allie Levy, played with Freddie Adu.
Oh my God.
At Potomac Soccer Club. And I went to see Freddie play for the first time as a post reporter. I think he was in eighth grade.
Did he convince you or someone assigned you?
Oh, I don't remember. I don't think they cared what I did. As long as there were like no F-bombs in my copy.
What was an eighth grade Freddie Adu like? Was there fanfare to this thing, or was it just like, because, you know, I remember, you know, you have a big basketball talent, for instance. The gym's packed, and everybody, there's a buzz, and like soccer. Maybe.
I don't recall there being a buzz. I recall I'm a smaller player and was a smaller player. So what popped out to me watching him, if I can recall, is just he was tiny, and so the way he tried to, and this was a high school game. He was in eighth grade, and he was playing against high school seniors. I mean, puberty is a factor.
That's a step too far for 99%.
So you're watching this eighth. So that's what I always look to sort of see how smaller guys, you know, make it work against bigger guys. And so I remember watching Freddie, you know, an eighth grader going up against a 17-year-old, 18-year-old center back and sort of seeing how he handled himself. There were moments of brilliance and then moments where he'd just get knocked off the ball. And you could probably describe his entire career with that sentence.
Yep.
One question here from the Toronto Duck. What's the most significant injury this season in Major League Soccer?
Oh, boy. I think Fernando Audi right now.
Yeah, that's the one that popped in my head.
Realistically, there are teams that won't make the playoffs, and they can blame, you know, their mishaps on injuries. But ultimately, the most influential comes in what it prevents you from doing from a championship perspective, I think. And I can't think of any – I'm trying to think throughout the league where I'm just like this completely hampered their season. I mean, you're looking at Adi right now. If Miguel Miron doesn't come back 100%, I think you're talking about Atlanta, maybe what could have been. And I know we've harped on Tata Martino.
But when you look at teams, like you said, there aren't a lot of teams that should have gone one way if so-and-so.
There's probably the
Red Bulls
fans out there saying, hey,
Red Bulls fans will talk about center backs. You know, they've had injuries at center back.
Maybe they win the Open Cup if Royer doesn't get hurt.
Yeah, that one's true.
Royer's a big one.
It's a big deal for them.
That is a big deal.
That is absolutely true. But otherwise, besides that, I don't know that anyone really stands out.
I mean, I think this DC United team could argue some about just a Patrick Nyarko even. Like Chris Rolfe. Those guys changed this
Chris
team.
Chris Rolfe's not an injury this year.
Right. But just his career
in
large part.
The
Galaxy.
The misfortune.
Ambrose Iago.
The Galaxy is probably out here saying, hey, look at us. Sebastian Legette, that's a huge one.
Robbie Rogers was a big one.
Just done. Yeah.
But Robbie Rogers was a big one because that was part of their back line that completely fell apart. Last one here, we got it from a no-name source.
Shout out to RSL fans, too. You had a ton of injuries.
That's true. A ton of injuries, actually, that they would have made the playoffs if they didn't have. In terms of Sporting KC critique, Sporting KC, 39 goals, less than 2016. The offensive change didn't work. SKC would be nowhere without Timilia.
Yeah, I think that's true. What'd you make of the Dom Dwyer trade, Brent? When you saw the numbers involved, because we just haven't seen something of that nature in this league yet. And I think, you know, we saw Dax, we saw Kevin Molino, and those were for big numbers, but to trade your kind of centerpiece goal scorer and do it for what amounted to more than $1 million in allocation was unprecedented.
Yeah, and I think Peter has shown an ability. What impresses me about Peter, and I realize the season, again, may not be ending, the stretch run may not be what Sporting fans want to see, and I can completely understand that. But what's impressed me about Peter is that he has been able to, over the years, continue to win, continue to be competitive while evolving the team while moving pieces on, while bringing new pieces in, keeping a similar philosophy, keeping a similar sort of foundation, a way of playing, an approach. Whereas we've seen other teams, other mid to small market teams, you know, when the core starts to unravel, everything unravels.
Yeah.
And Peter's been able to sort of plug holes and keep this thing moving. So I think he's earned that benefit of the doubt. And so you see the Dwyer trade and you're like, okay, he's got something up his sleeve. He's got, you know, I remember I've been to Peter Vermes' office one time he's a terrible decorator. He's got nothing in there.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember the depth
chart.
Charts. Yeah. Uh-huh. The guys down to U18 and Academy and he's got the entire thing mapped out. And so that was what I thought with the Dwyer move Peter, this is part of the way, this is what he does.
It's a right footed Dom Dwyer in a lot of ways that he's gotten Diego Rubio. Just didn't have a knee that could do it there for a while. He's back, Sporting KC, trying to get it done this week. And Decision Day, presented by AT&T, all the games at 4 p.m. The Whip Around show is on ESPN. You can watch them all on MLS Live. That's $7.99 for the final week and $4.99 if you buy it through iOS. Of course, pregame shows, 3 and 6:30 p.m. I'll host the Bad Boys. We've got Jeff Kassar, Ollie Curtis, Jimmy Conrad doing weird and wacky things. And
no way.
Jeff, yeah, who's the last one? Oh, Matt Doyle. How could I forget? That's a burn. That's it for us. Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. Big thanks to Brian Strauss for joining us. Of course, to you for listening. We'll catch you on Monday. The playoff field will be set.